you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
You have entered the Twilight Histories, an audio adventure that casts you as the hero. You will travel to strange and exotic worlds in the multiverse. A Carthaginian base on Mars, Egypt locked in an ice age, a Roman Empire that never fell. With the help of music and sound effects, in each episode you will be immersed in a world out of time. Today, you will explore an epic tale of ancient Greece and Rome created by Josh Hutchins. Mithridates, like Hannibal before him, was one of Rome's greatest enemies. You will travel back in time and will act as a bodyguard for this young Mithridates, trying to protect him from assassination. There is a bonus story available to our Patreon supporters, and I'll play a sample of that at the end of today's show. So don't change the channel. You're going to want to hear what comes next. And now, for today's show, this is Young Mithridates by Josh Hutchins.
Hello. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your time in the Bronze Age with the people of Shekalesh. I trust you've recovered your strength from the numerous skirmishes and confrontations you had there. Our team here at Twilight Histories has been working to find another similar adventure for you, and I think we have just the thing. You may know of a person named Mithridates in our history, yes? He was the king of Pontus in the 1st century BC. Given the honorific Mithridates the Great, he was indeed a person of great stature. Please put on your clothing for the journey while I finish your orientation. You're going back to our year 120 BC, to the Greco-Persian city of Sinope. There, our agent has made arrangements for you to be the servant of young Mithridates. He's about 10 or 12 years old at this time, and you'll be able to witness a portion of his rise to power. That is, unless your presence upsets that somehow, who knows? Now, let me look at you. Yes, a green linen tunic, good. Leather belt, check. Leather sandals, check. You really don't need anything else. At your request, we've placed your sword in safekeeping here at Twilight Histories. It will be available for you to pick up upon your return. If you have no questions, then you can step onto the platform and prepare for departure. You'll feel dizzy and disoriented at first, remember. The electric fields may even tickle, but once your wits return, report directly to Mithridates. Even at his age, our agent tells us, he can be quite assertive and does not look kindly on anyone shirking their duty. One last thing. In our timeline, Mithridates' father was assassinated by poison about the time you'll be arriving. Nobody blamed the boy, Mithridates, of course, but keep your eyes open to plots against him. Being his servant, you will most likely share in his fate in all things. Enjoy.
We must go. We must go now.
The voice is both desperate and commanding,
A pair of small hands shake you vigorously. Please, get up. We must go.
What? You croak, sleep still blurring your vision and making your throat sound scratchy and deep.
My mother, she suspects me. We must go.
Myth, buddy, what? You're still struggling to piece together his words, the remnants of sleep still clinging to you.
He slaps you smartly across the face. No more of this! Wake yourself or I shall leave you here!
The sting jolts you into full alertness. You rub your cheek and quickly climb out of your small bed, thrown into chaos of the moment. The air in your chamber is tense, heavy with a scent of danger. You grab your leather belt and knife, following Mithridates as he darts towards the door. Your feet pad softly on the cold stone floor, the sound occasionally muffled by the thick, ornate carpets.
Where are we going? You whisper,
scanning the dark corridor for any signs of movement.
To the stables. Gaius is waiting with the horses,
Mithridates snaps. The moonlight filters through the high windows, casting elongated shadows which dance on the walls as you move. The silence is eerie, broken only by the soft rustle of your tunics and the distant, indistinct sounds of the palace at night. You pass through a narrow passage, the cool air brushing against your skin, raising goosebumps. Mithridates pauses and turns to look at you. His eyes dart back and forth, and he clenches his jaw. As you near the stables, a guard suddenly appears around the corner. Mithridates steps back, pushing you forward.
Deal with him!
He hisses. Lunging, you draw your knife, stepping in front of Mithridates. The guard, taken aback by the sudden confrontation, has no time to react. Once, twice, thrice. You plunge your iron blade into his abdomen, while covering his mouth with your other hand. He retches and drops to the floor with a dull thump. Blood pumps from his stomach. That was Pharnaces. I liked him, you say, looking down at the man.
So did I, Mithridates says. He was kind to me, but I know he would not hesitate to do his duty and report my flight to my mother.
You turn your eyes to him and raise an eyebrow.
Your duty, he emphasizes, is to protect me, he sighs. You also not hesitate to do your duty?
He surveys the darkness ahead of you for a moment. The stone hallways and courtyards are open to the sky. Occasional torches punctuate doorways. Vegetation and hardy flowers, normally vibrantly colored, are nothing more than layers of gray in the pale light of the moon.
Quickly now,
he hisses, urgently spiking his tone. He sprints into the dark and you follow. In the stables, a boy not much older than Mithridates has three horses ready. The animals shift nervously.
Good work, Gaius,
Mithridates says, mounting his horse with practiced ease. You and Gaius follow suit, and with a swift kick, Mithridates leads the way out of the stables. The cool night air hits your face as you gallop into the open, the sound of hooves thundering against the ground echoing into the night. As you ride away from the palace, the enormity of this task settles on your shoulders like a heavy cloak. The stars twinkle overhead, silent witness to your flight into the unknown. The sun begins to set over the rugged terrain of Anatolia as you, Mithridates, and Gaius travel deeper into the wilderness after a long day. The air is crisp, scented with the resinous aroma of pine trees, and the sound of distant streams murmur through the quiet.
My crotch is killing me, you say aloud.
Mithridates turns to give you a sharp glare.
We should stop here and rest, you say, eyeing a small clearing surrounded by dense foliage. Mithridates nods, his young face etched with fatigue and tension. He pulls the reins of his mount and allows you and Gaius to move abreast of him and his horse. Nightfall will not hide us from those who might follow. We should continue on. I have the energy to travel further, but no energy for a fight should we be discovered, he says with a slight rasp in his voice. If we are discovered, Gaius says, they will kill all of us. Not just you, he says, jerking his chin towards Mithridates. I shouldn't have complained so loudly, you say. Mithridates shrugs. I'm certain our fear has propelled us further away this day than would the greed and lust for power of my stepmother's assassins. Gaius, his youthful energy barely diminished, hops off his horse and starts gathering twigs and dry leaves. I'll make a fire, he says, with determined efficiency. The crackle of twigs underfoot mixes with the rustle of leaves as you assist in setting up a rudimentary camp. The simplicity of these tasks, so different from the grandeur and peril of the palace, is oddly comforting. Mithridates, meanwhile, vanishes into the underbrush, moving with complete silence. You glance at Gaius, who shrugs, his hands busy with the kindling. Soon, a small fire flickers to life, casting a warm orange glow. The snapping sounds of the fire, along with the chirping of crickets, fills the air, easing the tension in your shoulders. You close your eyes for a long second and have to nearly pry them back open. You turn your head to Gaius. I need to stand up and walk around, Gaius, or I'm going to fall asleep. You rise to your feet and stretch your back, craning your head upward toward the night sky. The stars really are beautiful here, you muse. Mithridates emerges from the darkness, startling you. A small wild hare dangles from his grasp. He shrugs. It is the best I could do, he declares with a half-smile, dark circles beginning to show under his eyes. He hands the rabbit to you. Without the utterance of a word, you begin cutting and removing the skin and innards with your knife. The smell of cooking meat soon fills the air, mixing with the earthy scent of the forest. Mithridates watches the fire, unblinking. His jaw is firmly set, and you see the orange and red of the fire reflecting back at you from his eyes. You did well today, Mith, you say, breaking the silence. Choosing to leave could not have been easy. Mithridates looks up, a flicker of pride in his eyes. I must be strong, he says, quietly. For Pontus. You and Gaius nod. But my choice was made for me, he says. I woke to the sound of my chamber door opening. At one point recently, I considered oiling the door because it's quite loud and annoying. However, it saved my life last night. When I raised my head, the intruder was standing fully in the gap. She drew a short dirk, but before she could cross my room, I laid a stone on my sling and cracked her squarely in the forehead. She? Gaius asks, somewhat confused. Yes, she, Mithridates nods, and she is dead. One stone to the head from your sling killed her, you ask? No, I took her blade and finished the job. Gaius, now sitting cross-legged by the fire, looks between you two. We'll be fine, won't we? His voice is uneasy. We will, you assure him, as you and Mithridates share a sideways look. But we need to get further away. Much further, Mithridates says. I just want to go back and have another look at Serana. He leans back and laces his fingers together behind his head, relaxing. At least, She loves me in my dreams, he smiles.
Mithridates shakes his head.
Stop dreaming, my friend. You can make it happen if you really want her. Nobody is too good for you. You are my strong right hand, Gaius. The hare is soon cooked, its aroma blending with the smoky scent of the fire. The three of you eat in silence.
Needs garlic, Gaius says. You and Mithridates share a small laugh. After the meal, Mithridates insists on taking the first watch.
You two rest, he commands softly. I am not yet tired.
Lying down under the vast expanse of stars, the cool ground beneath you, and the warmth of the fire nearby, you watch Mithridates' vigilant silhouette against the firelight. Maybe you're just imagining it, but it looks like his shoulders are jerking up and down, almost like he's laughing or crying. It's the last thought you have before you close your eyes and quickly fall asleep. Gaius wakes you before the sun rises.
I cannot stay awake any longer, he says with a grimace.
I'm good, you reply, standing and rubbing your face. For the next 2 hours, you pace around the camp, taking frequent stops to listen to the wilderness around you. A couple times, you add wood to the fire, all the while trying to keep your mind from wandering into dangerous territory.
They knew, you whisper aloud. That glorified travel agent at Twilight Histories. Somehow he knew this would happen.
You steal another glance at Gaius and Mithridates. They're both sleeping quietly. When the eastern sky begins to show the first signs of changing from black to a bruised purple, you wake both of the boys. None of you say much as you drink the last of your water and eat several handfuls of overripe mulberries. Myth, you say, as you ride your brindle-colored horse alongside him. He turns to you.
Yes? Where were you planning to go? I'm not familiar with this land.
I hope you're not expecting me to know what to do next. I'm a bodyguard, not a great planner. He sighs and pats his mount gently on the shoulder.
We have ridden for more than 2 hours. There's a creek ahead about 10 minutes' walk. We can let the horses graze here while we fill our waterskins.
He dismounts in a fluid motion and straightens his tunic.
While we walk, I will share my plan with you.
You and Gaius also dismount. You watch him run his fingers through his bushy head of hair, trying to smooth it down.
I've never ridden a horse this much at once, he says, stretching his legs.
Mithridates tucks his sling in his leather belt and bends down to grab a couple smooth stones. You instinctively reach for the hilt of the knife at your side. He tosses up a stone and catches it with the same hand, signaling his satisfaction with it.
Ready? He says.
You and Gaius nod, and the three of you begin walking across a small open field towards a wooden hillside. Low mountains in the distance are showing their first signs of white at the peaks.
I remember this place just barely enough,
he says.
My father and I rode through here once with his baggage train and attendants on our way to Laodicea.
You look back at the horses. They seem to be peacefully eating grass, and you can just hear their jaws pulling and chewing over the sound of your own footsteps.
If I were at the front of my father's armies, or leading soldiers into a battle, I would tell you I have a glorious plan. But there are only you two beside me now, so I will admit I have no plan.
He looks at you both in turn.
Maybe that is not entirely true. My plan has 3 steps. Step 1, escape the palace and survive in the wilderness. Step 3, return to Sinop. Hail as king and successor to my father. I have no idea what step 2 is.
You take a deep breath and let it out quickly.
Myth, what are you, 10 years old?
11, he says.
11. It's not fair that you must go through this at such a young age, you say.
How old must I be for this to be fair? He says, a small hint of a smile turning up the corner of his mouth.
I don't think that's how I meant it. He pushes a short willow sapling aside.
Nothing is fair, he says with an exhale.
You drink from the creek. It's a cold kick in the guts, but it tastes very fresh. Each of you feels multiple water skins, and you start walking back to the horses.
I think we should continue to Laodicea, Mithridates says. I remember a few things about that city and its people. I think we would be safe there for a while. My father had an old friend there who promised to help him at any time he needed. I think that aid would also extend to me.
You kick a small stone and it bounces along the dusty ground.
How far is Laodicea? You ask.
Probably a week riding horse, Gaius says.
Or a month walking, Mithridates says, stopping to look around.
Where are the horses?
We don't have time to continue looking for them, Mithridates says to Gaius. He sighs heavily, heaving his shoulders up and down.
I don't want to walk all the way to Laodicea.
The two boys turn and face you. Your eyes dart from side to side.
I don't think we want to find them. They couldn't have just gone missing like that.
And we'd be fools to call for them, you say, keeping one hand on the hilt of your knife. Mithridates nods, holding his lips tightly shut.
Very well. Let us continue the journey eastward on foot. I lead the way,
he says, marching back into the woods with the creek.
I'll guard the rear, you say.
Gaius nods and picks up a nearby stick and looks at you. He shrugs.
It'll probably help on such a long walk.
And you walk for hours. The landscape alternates between arid open fields, large groves and glens of hardy trees clinging to the sides of hills and fed by small streams, and irregular hills surmounted by rough crags and confused jumbles of large limestone boulders. Though the nights are cool, even crisp, the day is hot and dry. Dust rises up to coat your shoes with each step you take on the hard-packed ground.
Did you hear that?
Gaius says, halting abruptly. You stop and look around, wildly scanning the horizon and the tree lines.
There it is again, he says, his eyes wide open, but unfocused.
I hear it too, Mithridates says, holding his hand to his brow and looking back to the west and the north.
Run, you say. You turn to Mithridates and Gaius. Run, now. You point to the low hill to the east about 200 meters away. Hide up there. They take 3 or 4 steps. Then Mithridates shuffles to a stop. Gaius runs into him. You follow their gaze.
Run, you repeat. I'll follow you. We need to close the gap on one of them so they can't hit us both at once.
The three of you start at a dead sprint towards the hill and the second rider. You feel your chest and legs tighten as you huff air out of your lungs in an attempt to control your breathing. Looking back, you see the first rider has entered a full gallop on his horse. The rider in front of you has barely moved.
Blast! You hiss between breaths. They have us stuck between second and third base.
Mithridates comes to a stop again, even though the rider is still 150 meters away.
I've heard enough of your
obscure game references to know that this is bad, Mithridates says, looking at you, but also keeping an eye on the rider. Whichever rider we approach, he continues, the other rider will simply adjust his pace to meet us at the same time we meet the other rider.
You nod.
Yeah, exactly that.
What if we go away from both of them? Gaius asks, pointing to the south.
They can still rendezvous with us together. They both squint at you. Rendezvous means meet us all at the same time. It's a word they use in Gaul.
They both nod.
And if we remain here, they'll simply both approach us at the same pace and rendezvous with us in the middle,
Mithridates says, looking at each rider in turn.
Perhaps they aren't after us? Gaius muses.
You and Mithridates give him a sideways glance.
Then why do they not hold their sword arm aloft and hail us from a distance? Why do they meet us on opposite sides?
Mithridates shakes his head.
They are both certainly here to kill us.
Well, you start, if we're forced to fight them both at once, then we'll be better off if we aren't tired from running when we do it.
Mithridates nods.
A slow walk will suffice? He asks, looking at you.
You also nod, and you all resume walking towards the Eastern Rider. He is no longer just a shadowy black figure at the edge of the open field. You see a long scabbard hanging loosely from the side of his saddle. The rider is wrapped in a dark gray cape with a bronze metal cap resting on a white cloth over his head and obscuring his face. Behind you, the other rider stalks closer. He holds a bow in one hand and his horse's reins in the other.
Myth, you say quietly. Does the rider in front of us have a bow?
After a brief pause, he replies,
No. The one behind us does. We need to subtly slow down so he can catch up.
I want him first, you whisper. Discreetly looking back after a minute, you see the first rider is now coming significantly closer.
Myth, Gaius, when I count to three, we all turn and run back to the west. He'll loose an arrow at us after a few paces. Everyone break to the right to avoid his shot. Cough if you understand.
They both cough. You sneak your blade out of its sheath and grasp it by the business end.
One, two, three, you whisper.
Instantly, the three of you turn on your heels and sprint towards the first rider. On cue, he shoots an arrow. All three of you dive to the right, and the arrow sticks in the dirt less than a meter away from Mithridates. You stop running, adjust your feet, and hurl the knife towards the rider. It sinks into the left eye socket of the horse, which then collapses to the dirt, throwing the rider several feet away in a dusty and confused mess of dark cloth. A moment later, you hear the rhythmic whir and thwack of Mithridates' sling.
Gaius, protect Mithridates, you shout,
as you stoop to pick up a fist-sized rock and run towards the fallen rider. With astonishing speed, the rider faces you with an arrow knocked on his bow. Expecting a thud in your chest at any moment, you lunge towards him and crush his skull with a rock an instant after he lets the arrow fly. Three quick and furious blows to the man's forehead is enough to kill him. On the fourth blow, one of his eyes bursts open. Juicy and bloody debris and gore stick to your face. You rise and quickly check yourself for arrows sprouting from your chest.
Help me,
Mithridates says, a strange quaver in his voice. You turn and run to him. Before you drop to your knees next to him, you glance to see the other rider is on the ground with his horse, blithely wandering away in the other direction.
Gaius, Gaius!
God, no, you say, holding your hand to his chest, and nervously feeling and inspecting the 8 inches of fletched arrow sticking out of his body near his collarbone. It's angled in such a way that it must have penetrated his lungs. Gaius coughs, and blood sprays out,
painting his face in red. Blood oozes out of his mouth and around the arrow shaft. He swallows heavily and looks at Mithridates, straining to speak.
Tell Serana I was brave.
Laodicea is alive. You don't know a better word to describe it. People are everywhere. Some are wearing colorful robes. Others wear plain white tunics or loincloths. A woman and several children move past you quickly, all the while singing a song in Aramaic about the mountains and the sea. Chirping birds and lively conversation in multiple languages, including Greek and Persian, seem to swirl all around you in Mithridates, just like the yellow leaves, as the soft wind blows them along the ground, making their own shuffling noises. Snow-capped mountains in the distance form a great half-circle around the city.
Mith, where do we go?
He seems frozen in his footsteps. You both stand there and gaze at the jumble of low brick and plaster homes, framing narrow streets. Further ahead, the gleaming white columns of the Agora stand in beautiful but stark contrast against the emerald green foothills behind them. Mithridates gestures to the Agora with his chin.
Zenon, one of my father's advisors, told me the Seleucid king Antiochus II founded this city and commissioned those columns of the Agora nearly 200 years ago. He turns to you with a strange smile.
I would like to be like him, Antiochus, roaming around this beautiful land, building cities.
He blinks slowly. All right, buddy, I know you're tired. We've been walking for days.
8 and 20 days. My friend, very little to eat, he says, with the same bizarre and drowsy smile.
Yes, I know, and we walked all night to get here this morning, so I repeat my earlier question, where do we go? He clears his throat and stretches his neck, seeming to clear his thoughts.
When my father and I came here, we spent much of our time with a man named Philostratus.
Well, there must be thousands of people living here. We can't just go up to someone and ask where Philostratus lives, you say, bracing your hands on your hips. Mithridates gives you a sideways look and a wry smile.
You do not know how communities like this work, do you? Allow me to be the tutor, and you the student.
He walks to a nearby man, tending a cart full of beans and cabbages. He gives a polite bow, and the man nods in return. Your eyes linger on the food, and you feel your stomach give a weak groan.
My companion and I are come from Galatia.
Mithridates reaches inside a small traveling satchel he took from one of the dead riders.
Do you know a man by the name...
Are you going to buy something or not?
The man says with a gruff tone. Mithridates pauses, staring at the man. Then he turns the satchel upside down and pours a heap of gold coins onto the man's cart.
I was going to buy some information from you, but we will go elsewhere.
The man's eyes bulge and dart between the gold and you as Mithridates sweeps the coins back into his satchel with his arm.
My apologies. I will gladly...
No. I do not believe you have the information I need. I do not wish to be a burden upon you. It was my understanding that the good people of Laodicea were kind to all travelers.
He finishes gathering the gold back into the satchel and looks at the man.
Please, ask me anything, the man says.
Very well. My family and I are merchants from Galatia, and I am come here to increase our trading with the people of the city. I am searching for a man named Philostratus.
The man tugs at the corner of his black mustache.
Philostratus, the teacher, he says.
Mithridates nods.
He died earlier this year. His apprentice, Daphne, teaches in his stead.
Mithridates slowly sets a gold coin on the cart with a click.
And where would I find this Daphne?
She used to stay with Philostratus near the Agora, but since his death, she built a small home near the amphitheater on the east side of the city.
He looks down at the coin, still being held firmly in place by Mithridates' index finger.
And the house is made of clay bricks, no plaster. The roof is of curved clay tiles.
Mithridates raises his eyebrow and gives an encouraging look.
She is normally in the Agora in the mornings, every other day, but spends the rest of her time at their home or in the garden behind the home.
Mithridates smiles and slowly removes his finger from the coin.
What is your name, friend?
Menander, he says.
Well, Menander, it would be a great kindness for you to provide me with two small cabbages.
Menander nods and hands Mithridates two heads of green cabbage. He turns and tosses one to you, then begins a brisk walk into the heart of the town. After disappearing into the crowd and taking several hungry bites of the cabbage, you look down at Mithridates. Aren't you going to eat your cabbage, you ask?
In time, he says, smiling. I want to survey the Agora here first. Milling about will also give time for our new friend Menander to send word to Daphne of our coming.
You pause from your next bite. You think he would do that? Mithridates rolls the cabbage around in his hand, turning it over and inspecting it from all sides.
If he is as shrewd as a merchant as I think he is, then he'll be sure to inform her.
He glances up at you and smiles.
If not, all these people will know us because you eat cabbage like a wild donkey. Such information is worth a small bit of money, and definitely worth the small bit of favor he will gain with Daphne.
Do you know Daphne? He takes another look at his cabbage, then places it in his satchel.
I do not, but if she is anything like Philostratus, then she will help us. And I believe I will need help in the days ahead.
The two of you speak with another vendor and purchase some goat cheese and olives. From a third cart, a fresh round loaf of bread. Weaving your way through the city into a clearing not far from the Agora in the heart of the city, you and Mithridates sit on the cool grass in the shade of several pine and beech trees. Eat, Mithridates says to you. You too, you reply. As you sit and eat, two men move around the grass clearing with a cart and rakes, removing heaps of pine needles.
Laodicea must be prosperous indeed if they can pay two servants to remove pine needles from this clearing all day,
Mithridates says.
You look around the clearing. I would bet they only do it once per week.
The rest of the time they probably maintain the agora, pick up rubbish, clean things, fix things. Who knows? And the more stable and peaceful a society is, typically the more resources they have to do things like that. Maybe they aren't being paid at all. You look at Mithridates. Maybe they're just two normal residents here looking for a way to serve a public need. He nods, seeming to be in intense thought. After you eat the entire bread loaf, a young woman approaches with a clay pitcher.
"Would you accept water?"
she says, smiling. "I accept," Mithridates says, and holds out his cupped hands. You each accept multiple handfuls of water to drink and wash the road dust from your faces.
"Will you be attending the play this afternoon?" she says.
"Well, I'm not sure if we..."
"Of course we are," Mithridates interrupts.
"But we must be away now. Much to do before then."
He flashes you a nervous look.
"As I'm sure you have much to do as well. Thank you," he says, giving a polite nod and rising to his feet.
You smile and nod as well. Then you collect your remaining food and follow Mithridates towards the eastern portion of the city. "Mith, I'm sorry if I said something wrong," you say quietly. He rubs his temples.
"No, it is not that. I just do not know exactly how to proceed here. I certainly do not want to tell street vendors who I really am. With Menander, I made up a story. When the girl began pressing into more conversation, I was fearful we would be forced to invent more lies. And I was also afraid we would contradict ourselves."
He pops another olive into his mouth and chews. "I see. Keep it simple," you say, trying to reassure him.
"Yes. Simple is best."
"So, your wealthy merchant family sent you, a young boy, and a mute bodyguard some 3 weeks away on foot to Laodicea so you can, what, buy stuff and gather information?"
"It is a terrible cover story, is it not?"
You bat your head from side to side. "Terrible or not, it is simple. Maybe too simple. What family name do you propose to give to Daphne?"
"I will use the name Xenon for myself. It is a name I can remember. And I will speak nothing of my imaginary family from Galatia."
"What about me?"
He grins. "For you, my friend, you shall be called Niketas. It means victory. For you brought me victory over the two assassins."
His face immediately loses its glow, and his eyes turn vacant. You place a hand on his shoulder. "Don't mourn for Gaius right now." He shrugs your hand away.
"I have been mourning his death since the moment it happened. I have not ceased mourning. He was my friend in all things."
He sniffles and straightens his back. "But you are right. Now is not the time." He looks up at you as you pass through a low stone gate at the end of a narrow street. Outside, it appears the houses at the edge of the city have been used to form a protective wall. There are almost no exterior doors, save the stone gate. You both turn and see a ruddy brick home atop a small hillock ahead of you.
"I have money, enough to buy some time," he says, "and maybe to buy some friends."
"Money doesn't buy friends," you say. He shrugs.
"It buys the kind of friends we need."
That was Young Mithridates by Josh Hutchins. As I mentioned at the start of the show, there is a bonus story only available to our Patreon supporters. Have a listen to this short sample.
Mithridates and you stand before the door of a brick home. The knuckles of his left hand hover near the wooden surface of the door as he seems to concentrate. "Xenon? Do you plan on knocking any time today?"
You see a droplet of sweat run down his forehead onto his cheek. He squeezes his lips tightly and exhales.
I'm around the back,
a woman's voice announces. He raises an eyebrow, and you both walk around the side of the house, through a small wicker gate, into a well-kept garden. Red and yellow butterflies dance between different plants. Your electronic chip in the base of your skull quickly identifies a collection of herbal plants. Mint, sage, dill, lavender, coriander, along with a variety of lentils and berries. A large olive tree provides shade to the quiet garden, and in the middle of it all is a stone bench where a figure in blue clothing tends to what looks like an aloe vera plant.
A moment, while I tend to an injury, she says.
If you want to hear the rest of this story, as well as gain access to almost 200 other audio adventures, please head on over to our Patreon page by looking up the Twilight Histories. You can also go to our website and follow the link at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.